All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of The Foundry. And I'm grateful for Heelturn for giving me this opportunity. I'm joined by my co-host, a very good friend of mine, Mr. Matt Parrott. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing fantastic, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Well, I guess not. I have a confession. We are missing the Super Bowl.
Jeez.
So, you know, pack it up. Movement canceled.
Wait, they're not holding that off until the end of our show or anything like that?
No, actually, I think we're competing. And since both of us are actually twice as successful and 10 times more handsome than Tom Brady, I think this will be great. All right. So, yeah, no, you know, there's, as always, there's a lot of really fun, you know, awesome news that's just, you know, just peak degenerate. So why don't you start us off with some of our first stuff we have here?
Okay, yeah, we are going to start off with our news blast, but I want the listeners to know this show is not just going to be about news, and it's not just going to be making jokes. We will be making some hot jokes here. But we kind of got a plan with this podcast. It's called The Foundry, and the idea behind this show is we're going to start out with the usual commentary, the usual hot takes and shit posting on current events. But at the end of every show, we're going to try to interview a subject matter expert, a skilled professional, some skilled trade that's dox resistant, with the idea being kind of like almost like Mike Rowe's dirty jobs or whatever, with the idea being helping dudes get the fundamentals in place to live the Wignat lifestyle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wig gang, you know, for life, apparently. No, and I think a lot of people listening will know that what I'm doing here in Ohio is something that I'd like to eventually expand out to the rest of the nation. You know, we're starting like really small here, but I'd like to be able to grow this. It's just we need to build these foundations so going forward we can actually get back into activism. Obviously, on that note, obviously things would be a little bit different than they were. I think Parrott would agree. But going down the road, like we need to make sure that we have, you know, a lot of, I guess, safety nets for if something does happen, if we are sued, if, you know, whatever can happen. We just want to make sure that we have all of those layers protected, you know.
Well, a lot of guys, when they start out being nationalists, we'll get to the news blast, I guess. But a lot of guys, when they start out being nationalists, they're in these situations, right, with their career, with their lifestyle, and then they're kind of like pinned up, you know. They can't actually say their message or HR will fire them. But there's a whole world of careers and opportunities out there where you can actually make a living, support yourself, and still be pro-white. And that's kind of the vision here. But this show's our premiere is kind of going to be a letdown because we're not going to have like a cool like welding or trucking or masonry work or some kind of badass skill trade. We're actually going to learn to code, and the guest will actually, I'm going to put on a different hat, and Tony is going to interview me about learning how to code and whether, you know, let you, the viewer, decide whether that's a good foundry profession to have.
And that's actually something a couple years ago you had sent me some material to learn how to code, and I didn't have a big enough brain to really get that. So that's actually something maybe going forward, maybe you could recompile and we could like add that to show notes and stuff so people can get into that.
Yeah, and that's another thing is the mentor-mentee stewardship kind of relationship we need to build where if somebody's interested in coding, hit me up at thefoundry@protonmail.com. And with other professions that we feature on here, you can email the same one, and I'll try to set you up with somebody as best we can as, you know, kind of a resource to help you figure out how to get off the ground with that particular trade. But the thing, let's get to the news blast here. The thing that's been kind of all over the news, irritatingly so for the last couple of days, is poor Governor Northam.
He's having a hell of a week as far as PR goes, isn't he?
Yeah. So Washington Times, unforgivable. Trump assails Ralph Northam over racist photo and super late term abortion.
Did Trump actually comment on the super late term postpartum abortion? Or was he speaking only of, ooh, man, that picture, oof?
Well, the big news wasn't that they're now killing born babies. The big news is that 30 years ago, you know, 2 years after I was born, 30 years ago, he went to a costume party as either, and we'll never know, maybe either a Klansman or a gentleman of color. He either wore blackface, which my conspiracy theory, several others, he's relatively tall. He's 6 foot tall. And the taller one is in blackface. So
you've done some digging.
Yeah.
You've done CSI on this.
Yeah, we do some original research here. So I think he's in the blackface and not in the Klan robe, though we're still now. His latest was he apologized for doing it, and then he's like, wait a minute. That photo of me, I don't think I was doing blackface in that photo. I got that mixed up with a different time I was doing blackface, so I'm not in the photo, so I'm scot-free. I'm going to remain your governor.
Not exactly a very good defense.
It hasn't been holding up for him. Hillary, Trump, of course, all the mainstream conservatives are like, oh my gosh, you are racist, you bad man, you have to go. Which is actually problematic because there's a more liberal black guy as the lieutenant governor. So all these conservatives who are thinking they're clever trying to torpedo this guy are going to end up in an even worse situation. But that's kind of conservatism in a nutshell.
Typical, Republicans being extremely short-sighted and trying to, like, curry favor with people that literally want them dead. But, you know. That's the way to do it. That makes sense.
Well, we're going to convince them. We've got a plan. Democrats are the real racists. We're going to actually take that meme and run with it. We're going to make Jack Posobiec's wildest nightmares come true here.
Oh, man. Wow.
It's going to be great. Okay, so let me quote the article a little bit here. In tweets Saturday night, Trump criticized Northam over his recent comments on late-term abortion. He also said that Northam's Republican opponent in the 2017 gubernatorial election, Ed Gillespie, would have won had the photo turned up during their campaign. Earlier this week, abortion opponents accused Northam of supporting infanticide. That's just kind of a footnote at the end of the article.
Sure.
Do you remember during the midterms, there was the awesome ad where these two black kids were playing on the street?
Oh, I already knew. Yeah, absolutely.
And this libertarian racist with like a Gadsden flag on his truck, who is alt-right, was actually just driving around in his big fuel-inefficient truck.
As one does, yeah.
Trying to run over minorities, which was an attempt to drag the James Field thing, because in their mind, James Field actually just went to Charlottesville to run over minorities.
Well, in their mind, what do you mean? That's what the jury found. That's the truth. That's the history of it.
Yeah,
he went there, and then he coyly started navigating home on his way. Yeah, that was just to throw off our scent, you know.
Yeah. Well, he's a very clever mass murderer. Anyway, so Trump's been going at it. Sobiec's been going at it. Do you think we're going to get the mileage that we're looking for out of this costume party? Are we going to be able to prove that Democrats are the real racist and seize the narrative and be the anti-racist Republican Party we've always meant to be?
Well, I'll have to hit up my man Charlie Kirk, but I'm not really sure. I haven't heard from Candace Owens yet, so I don't really know which way they're going with this.
Well, exactly. No, it's just fun.
What I really appreciate about it is he's like, well, no, it wasn't me that time, but I did do the Michael Jackson bit and, you know, browned up my face.
Oh, yeah. Well, that thing where he was getting ready to do the moonwalk. His wife was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Ralph. Oh, not here. Not in front of the kids. No. No, and somebody pointed out, too, in his picture there, I'm looking at it right here, in his actual yearbook photo, he's smirking, which we know is absolutely off limits. We don't smirk, okay?
Yeah, it's white supremacy.
He's also manspreading in the picture right next to it. Mm. So this guy's clearly no good. We need to get this other guy in.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know anything about, the lieutenant governor, but from what I've heard, it's not going to be good.
Right.
Or, unless you're an accelerationist, in which case this is going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Maybe that's their plan. We'll just get every white guy fired for some nonsense until we have a full minority government. And then we could just topple it right over.
Yeah, it's going to be perfect. Yeah, I cannot wait. That's going to be good. Virginia's already a really good place. Doing a lot of big things, really important stuff. I went one time. But, I don't know. The locals were pretty rude, though. I don't know if I'll go back.
They were, what's their state? Love or something?
Virginia's for lovers.
Yeah, they
were. I didn't feel the love.
I didn't feel the love
either. No.
They were quite insensitive to me. Quite intolerant. I might say. It was.
I seem to remember you standing in front of some sort of a statue, and then the police actually came and took you away.
Yeah,
what the hell was that?
I had a permit. I was going to go, go on a walk in the park, and they got really, really shitty about it. Why would they have that park there with that statue there if I'm not, welcome to go,
Right. You see a group of well-dressed boys, you figure they're just there looking at the statue too. Like, you didn't know what was going on.
I'm entirely innocent. Okay, so here's another article, The Hill. McAuliffe calls on Northam to resign. Situation in Virginia is untenable. So everybody's kind of McAuliffe, as you'll recall, was actually the governor during Charlottesville. He's now the former governor.
And what was that quote he had, where he did that press conference and he was like, just stop. I remember it was like something completely just weak and dumb.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how much McAuliffe, that's one thing that hopefully with the lawsuits and everything we can get to the bottom of. I don't know how responsible McAuliffe in the state of Virginia were for how stupid things got in Charlottesville.
Yeah. Well, and that's something.
Helped.
Yeah, no, it's something like we can't terribly get into as far as speculation and, about like the lawsuits. But I don't know. It's one of those things like the cops are either like utterly incompetent or someone was like, hey, we're not doing that. So I don't think either is really going to bode well for them.
Yeah, well, what's absurd is that we're talking about this costume party 30 years ago instead of infanticide right here and now. Of course, that's not news. Everybody at the water cooler is asking, was he the Klansman or was he the Negro? Which one do you think he was? To quote the article, former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe called on his successor Ralph to resign late Friday after Northam admitted he appeared in a picture showing a man wearing blackface and another man in a Ku Klux Klan robe. So I don't get what the big deal. I thought the Ku Klux Klan was a democratic institution anyway. I thought all the.
So. Yeah, you know what? I went and saw this Dinesh D'Souza fella. He made a movie about that. Which if
everyone laughed at him.
Yes, if nobody's seen that, like, as soon as this is over. Please go watch this. Like, give him money for it. It's so goofy. He deserves to have money. I hope Dinesh D'Souza keeps making movies like this forever. And honestly, since that, I've been referring to myself as a Jacksonian Democrat. I think it's hilarious.
Okay, so the Congressional Black Caucus and the Virginia Legislative Black Caucus, no word yet from the Congressional White Caucus or the Virginia White Legislative White Caucus. They haven't weighed in on the matter yet.
We'll hear from them soon.
Yeah, I'm sure. Had both issued statements Friday night calling on incumbent governor to step down. Now, of course they do because they get their guy. So all the white guys are dogpiling on their guy for what was obviously just a joke, right? And the guy's obviously a shitlib just like them, but he made a mistake 30 years ago with a joke that was funny at the time and is not funny now.
Well, I don't.
I mean, I still think it's kind of funny. But...
Yeah, I was going to say, like, honestly, it's like a really, to me, it's like a safe, non-edgy joke. The joke is that they're opposites. That's all it is. It's
right.
It's completely as tame as like the bullshit like rapping granny. Like, whoa, she's old. She shouldn't be rapping. That's what this is. Like, whoa, he's black and he's a Klansman. Wow. But like, that's crazy to these people.
Well, I think there's some saying that the Klansman looks like it might be female, so it could be like
that's a good couple costume.
My girlfriend is a Klansman marauding against me.
There's layers to this. I wasn't aware.
And that's a big thing. And among the left, they do that at home. And as long as you have the right safe words and everything, that's actually race play. I think it's called.
Okay, hot. we should probably try to meme that that's his wife, though. I don't know. She'd be pretty tall. He's a bigger dude, isn't he?
Yeah, but she's shorter than him in the thing. I don't know. It could be.
Man. Yeah, I don't know. That could be a gal. I've never thought about it, but now I'm looking at it. Maybe, yeah, the shoulders are kind of narrow. Interesting. I hope it's his wife.
That's what I'm thinking, too. I want to drag her into this.
Yeah, might as well. You know, when things like this happen, like, all we can ever do is amplify this shit. It's hilarious. Just keep it going. Like, why have a measured take on something like this? It doesn't matter anymore. Like, the American government is such a joke of a meme. Like, just keep it going. Like, I just want to see how crazy it can get.
Well, everybody goes for that first attack. Like, you tripped the politically correct wire. You have to go down. Like, let's go a few levels into this. Like, are you ready to denounce your wife for wearing a Klan costume?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you endorse race play costume fetishism or not, Governor Northam? Really.
Are you ready to abort your adult children?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're able to time travel and one of your kids dressed up in a costume like that, would you travel back in time to abort them to stop?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think like 40th trimester. Abortions are pretty acceptable now. So, yeah.
A postal birth abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what is it that this is like a proposed law in Virginia, right? Or did this one actually go through? I know the one in New York did.
I don't think it actually managed to go through. I think it almost did. And of course it will eventually, because that's the way they're always pushing.
They're electing transgender representatives in Virginia now. Like, how would this not happen?
Well, Virginia is so demographically hosed because they've got that cancer over in Washington, D.C. with more and more dipshits just constantly metastasizing off the festering tumor of Washington.
Well, yeah. And what is it? Fairfax County. That is the one, like, right there. It's like, yeah. One or two, like, yeah. I know that, like, because this is something I wrote an article for. I don't remember if it was on the TWP site or if it was a trad youth thing even longer ago. I had written something about, like, how demographics in, like, that one county had, like, switched so drastically that, like, the majority of people are, like, foreign-born now in, like, an entire county.
Right.
You know, it's like, and it happened in, like, 20 years. It just instantly flipped.
Well, it's sad because in Virginia, it's kind of like Illinois, you know. There's still a lot of Virginia, especially over there to the west, that's still American, right? But they're just totally hosed by that one urban region.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Illinois. Like, you have these people in southern Illinois who are just as hillbilly as we are, as I am. But they're beholden to Chicago gun laws and stuff.
Yeah. No, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, like, we actually recently, me and one of my guys went through Illinois. And, like, before you go through, you have to make sure, like, you're not even, like, thinking about, like, a firearm or else, like, you're done, you know? Like, you can't do this driving through.
Stop. Put my concealed carry in my trunk.
Yeah.
And then when you get to Missouri, you can go to your trunk and get it back.
Yeah, you have to have the weapon, like, in another compartment. You have to have the ammo, like, in another one in case the bullets accidentally leap out of the magazine and, yeah, firing at people. Yeah. Yeah, good place. No, I mean, that's how, in the future, unfortunately, like, I think Ohio is going to experience a similar thing with Columbus. Like, my dream is that we can just wall off Columbus and drop a dome on it and just say, okay, like, do your weird Somali shitlib thing there, you know? Because the rest of Ohio really isn't like that. Like, there's obviously problems with Cleveland and Cincinnati, and Toledo might as well be Michigan. They can have it. That's fine. Right. But, like, Columbus.
Now, you guys finally got rid of Kasich here a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. They elected the manlet Mad Mike DeWine, yeah.
He's got to be
like 5'1".
I don't keep up on Ohio politics.
Well, you should, because this is the real ethnostate. it truly is.
Ohio has no distinguishing character. The northern half of it's Michigan. The southeastern part of it's like West Virginia. The southeastern part of it's Kentucky. There is no Ohio.
See, that's what everyone thinks, but actually, Kentucky is just southern Ohio. We haven't let that out yet. That's a secret. So thanks for
they just mapped out all the states, and there's this kind of empty space that didn't make any sense, and they eventually called it Ohio. But
yeah, like, what's this place that's always flooded? I don't know. It's Ohio, I guess.
Yeah, Buckeyes in it, I guess.
Yeah, for some reason, which I've never seen with my own eyes, but okay. Columbus, I was reading an article, and it was actually comparing Dayton to Columbus, okay? And it was about how Columbus is, like, growing rapidly. It's, like, well above, like, national averages for growth and for immigration and all this.
Right.
And Columbus, actually, per capita, is, like, the third gayest city in the country, so that's really nice. And
both
it's
in terms of how many gay people it has, and just in a broader 90s,
it's just kind of
like
gay.
It's the third gayest city in America.
No, and it's also got the second most Somalis per capita outside of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really insane because like Ohio was one of the states that like carried Trump harder than almost any, I think harder than anywhere besides West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's just so weird. And then you have this one dead in the center, this cancerous East African, nightmare. It's so awful. I'm so glad that I live in the Dayton area. I can tell you that much.
Well, I don't know why we imported all these Somalis. I mean,
there's no reason.
The blacks and you know what? Like Ann Coulter says, you know, we got the best blacks. Like we got, they're really funny. They can dance. They're always making
our
jokes.
Oh, American blacks. Okay. Yeah. If you're going to have blacks, you know,
it's like we went there. It was like, okay, who can do funny things? Get on the boat. You know, it's kind of like it's kind of like a talent show. But these guys, like they're surly. They don't beatbox. They don't.
Yeah, no, and their rhymes are just weak. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
No, I've had friends that worked as social workers up in Columbus, and they're like pretty left wing. You know, certainly not racist or anything, but. With the Somalis, they're like, this is a lost cause. Like, they can't learn, literally, like, a lot of them have gotten, like, kind of woke because of the Somali question.
Right.
It's like, they can't learn to drive. They don't know, like, not to assault and rape women. Like, you have to teach them that, you know?
Right.
And every, literally everything. It's, like, insane. It's like they actually, like, beamed in from another planet with, like, no context at all. And it's like, I understand Somali is bad, but I know they have cars, you know, and it's not, it's honestly, they're not that difficult to figure out. There's only a couple pedals. You do this.
I don't think they're bringing over the ones with cars.
Well,
they're not sending their best.
They are not sending their best. Or if they are sending their best, then we've just got to stop this. This can't be allowed to continue. I don't know. It's a whole nightmare scenario, but, I don't know. A lot of states are going to have like the same thing, but they're going to have like their capital city be this. And I mean, obviously this is already how it is, but it's going to get worse and worse as things continue, you know? And keep in mind, I'm going to bat for Dayton, and Dayton is literally the, once again, a per capita leader, but this time in opioid deaths. So we got that going.
I feel like Dayton should be in Indiana. I'd be willing to move the state line over to pick up Dayton. Dayton's all right.
We'll discuss this after the show. We'll draw.
We'll take it offline. Okay, so take us into the Super Bowl.
Oh, well, damn. I don't really know what's going on with it yet, but I was reading a bunch of stuff about it.
I think there's some kind of game going on.
Yeah, some sort of sports, something about doing a point. I don't know. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, I think inner city youth in skin tight spandex are wallowing around.
It's vibrant.
And a lot of people are out there watching that instead of us.
That's sad. You know, you've got this like glorious neck beard, and I've got this weak chin. Like these are things that people need to see. You know?
This is my chin simulator. Yeah, you know, people assume I have a chin because of this right here. Okay, people make fun of my neck beard, but you know, if there's pictures out there of me before the neck beard, and they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah.
I guess that's not so bad. Maybe I should adopt that.
Well, you already have a chin, so it's not mandatory.
Thank you for lying. I appreciate that.
This is actually like a medical necessity for my face.
They sent you home from school until you could grow a neck beard because
it's like making fun of somebody's prosthetic leg, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, you paid good money for that. Yeah. It's like Hank Hill's prosthetic ass. It's just on your face. Yeah. No, the Super Bowl, we've got Adam Levine, which that's a really interesting last name. I don't know what ethnicity that is.
Oh,
I'm gonna look it up. I believe he's doing the halftime show, and there's rumors that this is going to be a whole, you know, talking about kneeling and doing the whole bit, and it's just going to be a dumb, you know, fuck Trump type show, and it's going to be hilarious because, like, who are the people watching football? Like middle-aged, you know, boomer white dudes with money that they could be giving to their children, but, you know, they're spending it on tickets and the RV to go to the big game.
Or, but, like, donating to the American Legal Defense Fund.
They could be doing that. They're not at the moment, but they should be. Maybe we just need to, like, I don't know, maybe we need, like, some sort of a screaming eagle with a flag in the background and, like, a motorcycle and some sort of, like, a prescription drug card in the background. And that way it, like, triggers their mind, you know. Or they're a hot Thai wife. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're into that.
Yep.
But no, I'm blown away at, like, the dissidence that, like, football watchers experience, like, what they engage in day to day, because they'll talk to me, like, at work, but they're like, oh, I don't even watch that football no more. You know, it's all just a big, you know, shit show. They're just protesting all this shit. They don't even care about America, blah, 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 the whole thing, you know? And it's like, yeah. So, like, don't do that thing. Like,
well,
don't give them money.
A political thing. Like, I remember when I was corporate here, it's been almost 10 years ago now, but, you know, I'd be at the urinal.
As one does, chatting with all the other men at the urinal.
Okay, I'm not manly enough to do that. I know that's like a, you know, you got a
real Chad move.
Yeah, it's a kind of a Chad move to casually talk at the urinal.
Clapping each other on the back, yeah. That prostate's healthy, yeah.
But, you have guys come up while you're at the urinal, like, hey, how about that Colts game last night? And it was an apolitical thing. And, you know, that's what's irritating about the left. And you'll see this on the Super Bowl game. I'm obviously not watching it. And I'm not shitting on, excuse me. I ain't hating on people who are watching it. It's, you know, I don't want to be, you know, too edgy with all that. Like, enjoy the Super Bowl with your family, eat some carbs, you know, whatever. But the thing is it used to be an apolitical thing, football. And it's the same with the weather. Like, you know, you used to be able to be like, man, how about this weather? Like, whoa, what about this polar vortex? But now it's this.
What are we going to do about global warming? Yeah,
exactly. Like, you hear a bunch of leftist bullshit. It's the same with the game now. Like, yeah, how about this? Well,
the Colin Copernicus fella. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have an opinion on Kaepernick, and you got to have an opinion on all the anti-Trump stuff and all that, and all the woke capital commercials. Everyone, you know,
like last year, they had a good one where it was, and it's so bizarre too. Like, I love this. Like, I love the Gillette commercials. I love all this woke capital shit because you don't. And this is like a Dennis Miller tier joke. Like, you don't know what, like, the commercial is about until, like, you see the logo at the end. You know. It's that stone toss comic, you know, the, like, how will this help us sell burgers? Because they're actually selling the interracial kiss, you know.
Yeah, there was a Jeep ad just yesterday. It went on for like a minute on the YouTube. It was all just like America and interracial relations and open borders. Jeep. It's like,
what do you mean? And Jeep, it's really funny because, like, didn't that used to be, like, the cool rapper guy car back in the day? Like, didn't LL Cool J drive a Jeep? Like, wasn't that the thing?
Well, even before that, it used to be, like, a kind of like a redneck car, right? Like, you drive the Jeep.
Silly boys. Jeeps are for girls, yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of a cool guy thing to drive a Jeep. But now they're like, no, we're not cool guys. We're actually, like, woke capitalists.
Yeah, we take this very serious. Yeah, we care very deeply about the plight of whatever the hell in Myanmar. Yeah, it's right. Really good.
Okay. Hey, we got. I guess they're called super chats or whatever, where somebody sends money. This is the most important.
That sounds correct.
Okay, so Jake for $40. Okay, thank you very much, Jake. He asked, can you guys offer any helpful info or ways to support Will Planer or Tyler Watkins Davis, who's pending trial on February 11th, or any of our other political prisoners? Hail Foundry. Okay.
Already got a hail. Not bad.
Doesn't that ruin everything if somebody says hail?
Oh, yeah, movement destroyed, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Jake. You just sabotaged everything.
You gave the game away.
We learned nothing from Hailgate. Okay, so With Will Planer. I spoke to Will Planer on Friday before noon. I am nervous. Okay, so he called me, and he said the jury is hung, that they don't have a verdict, and the judge is turning the screws to get a verdict out of them. Okay, and I was hoping to hear from him either late Friday or sometime this weekend, because he usually calls with updates, and I haven't heard anything. So I'm just, what we need for Will right now is prayers, honestly. Because I looked at the Sacramento County, the inmate website, and it says he's still in there. And it says he's due for a court date on Monday at 9 a.m., which implies that maybe the jury's doing the stuff over the weekend. So, you know, sacrifice a goat, pray, whatever your denomination is. And we are very optimistic. He has the most point-blank self-defense trial there ever was.
Yeah, being ganged up on by, like, several hundred Antifa. Yeah,
300 versus 20. Yeah. And explicitly, I mean, that's you know, cause my eyeball to twitch. I'm sorry. But they, before Sacramento, they're like, we're going to go there to their permanent event and we're going to beat them up. And they had a bail fund with like $30,000 raised for
preemptively,
bail.
Yeah.
Yeah, preemptively. Like, we're going to go commit crimes against these people. Okay. So,
another event where nationalists had a permit and everything was completely above board and, you know, everybody listened and did what the police asked for. Yeah.
Yeah, the Sacramento Spartans, they had speeches. They were actually anticipating a safe, legal, permitted event. And the funny thing was that the topic of the event was protesting how these leftists are attacking Trump supporters at Trump events and protesting the police not protecting normal family people showing up to a mainstream political event. And, you know, there's all that footage of, like, normal family men and women getting chased around and bludgeoned for trying to attend a Trump rally in California. So that's and of course they try to have an event about that. And of course the left attacks that event. And of course the cops do nothing. And then the fun part is all our guys got out alive. I would say our guys had one serious injury. I was absolutely just bleeding all over the place, but he didn't even go to the hospital for it. Those guys are some tough dudes.
Yeah, no, There's a lot of very interesting pictures of that event. And,
the fire hider, that was not our guy.
No, that was something unrelated. That was no, you can really see how the actual, you know, I'd say the tussle, or what do they always say in articles? The clash,
yeah,
protesters clash, a very neutral thing. Yeah. They just started fighting out of nowhere. Nothing happened. Like, out of the blue.
Their guys explicitly instigated. I mean, Yvette Falarca went on camera and she's like, "Hi, I'm Yvette. And we attacked these guys for disagreeing with us politically." Mm-hmm. It doesn't get more point blank than that.
And actually, too, like in the whatever that field was there, like across from the state house, like I seem to recall like an article mentioning that like they even recovered a gun from the scene. Like one of them brought a gun to, you know, who knows, you know, but like you don't bring a gun to a rally like that with those type of people and not be planning something. So.
Right.
Good times.
So anyway, they had that bail fund. Things did not work out for them, even though there was 300 versus 20 of our guys. The bail fund got translated into a medical fund.
Yeah. Oh, one of the guys was like in a coma for a minute.
Yeah. I think he's recovered. I don't want anybody hurt. I just want to be able to be pro-white in broad daylight. Without getting attacked. That's always been, you know, my goal. Like, all this, like, I clearly am not in this to just attack people. And nobody is. And that's a leftist trope. But so anyway, Will needs all your prayers this weekend. Now, this Tyler Watkins Davis, do you know who that is?
I've heard the name mentioned before.
Somebody in the chat room tell me who that is.
Oh, and by the way, everybody in the chat, unfortunately, these are my real eyebrows. I'm not a retard, and I don't style them this way. They grow this way. And I just don't want to constantly have to be trimming them down to look like a normal human. And since I'm portrayed as a, you know, supervillain most of the time, you know, like in that article and all that, I think it's funny. You know, if you're going to be the bad guy, just go with your genetic predisposition to looking like a bad guy.
Yeah, your eyebrows really. Have you seen that skit? The Are We the Baddies?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like your eyebrows provoke that moment. Like we're obviously
there's a skull on it. Yeah, like his eyebrows are pointed. Yeah. No, that's fair. That is a fair critique.
So, okay, whoever this guy is, the best way, he might be Ram, one of the Ram guys, but Augustus Invictus, the American Legal Defense Fund, ALDfund.org, we've got to be raising money for these guys. If everybody's listening here, just through $5, $10, it would make a world of difference. And that's another thing we at the Foundry are going to do a better job on with future episodes, is letting people know who needs help and what, you know, what kind of support we can do. Because with this legal stuff in 2018, we were just flat on our backs. And we have got to fight the legal fights. We've got to be for these guys behind the wire. Oh, wait. Tyler Davis is the last defendant in the DeAndre Harris case.
Okay.
So I'll do a little bit of research on that.
So I know the name sounded familiar.
Okay, yeah. I've mainly kind of been
Borden and Goodwin, yeah.
Well, yeah, and those guys. And poor Planer, because he wasn't Charlottesville. And everybody kind of moved on from Sacramento because it's been so long. I mean, it's been about 2 years that he's just been sitting in jail awaiting this trial, right?
Yeah.
And everybody kind of, you know, so I've been trying to help people remember him.
I don't know if they're married, his wife or his girlfriend, like, she's a really great gal. And, you know, after all this happened, she kept everybody up to date. So that's another way to help support, like, whether you're donating to him or donating to his fund or even, like, sending something her way, like, anything helps in these situations.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so anything else here? Okay, so New York Times. Okay, just today, the New York Times had a really mic drop article that came out and said, with the New York Times imprimatur, right, what we Wignats have been saying for years now, and nobody will listen.
By the way, on the Wignat thing, I just love that it's become such a silly phrase that, like, it was supposed to be, initially, it was, like, supposed to, you know, sort of make you feel stupid, like, haha, you're a wigger, you know? But it's become this big, broad thing that everybody's embraced. And people are even, like, lobbing the accusation at, like, Spencer, who... I don't think he necessarily fits the original interpretation of, like, the juggalo nationalist. So I don't know. That's just a really good term.
Their stuff doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I've kind of got this thing. I know a lot of people disagree with me about OPTIC, but I really feel like sometimes it's better if somebody's just throwing a label at you to just be like, okay, here's the label, rather than trying to dance around. So if anybody doesn't like the Wignat label, I think maybe national populist or dissident right, or, you know, there are other labels, but I mean, I guess this food fight that we neither instigated nor wanted to have and tried to stop on the back end, they wanted to call me a Wignat. So whatever.
You know. Yeah, sure. Sounds good. Awesome. Well, it's also more too to be anybody that's critical of not even just Trump, but anybody that's, like, skeptical on voting, like, for Republicans. It's like, oh, come on. Like, this is just getting too loose and strange. You know, like, are liberals Wignats too? I don't get it.
Well, yeah, they've at this point, I almost feel like they've kind of lost the argument and are backing off. So I don't know how much we should chase them while they're running. Just let them
Because they went pretty easy on us when things got a little tough. So yeah,
that's true. Maybe I'm always being a sucker.
I'm out of cheeks to turn. I don't know.
Okay, so the New York Times article is how Republicans erase Trumpism. I'm just going to read a bunch of segments from it because it's really powerful. Okay. Critically, congressional Republicans have adopted strategies that make the public, and more important, his conservative base, think Mr. Trump is in command. To casual followers of political news, the visible evidence from congressional votes and news releases suggests a powerful president leading a loyal congressional party. In reality, Republican legislators have hidden their influence, purposefully disguising a weak president with little clout on Capitol Hill, while also preserving party unity. So what they're saying here is that the McConnell and Paul Ryan and McCarthy, the actual, you know, deep state swamp Republicans, have been entirely in control this entire time. And Trump has had no ability to promote his agenda whatsoever. When he came there, they hermetically sealed the whole thing, and he's been completely incapable of getting outside the box they placed him in.
Yeah, no, like, as soon as he became the president-elect, he had a meeting with Mitch McConnell, and McConnell had told him, like, hey, we're not doing this America First nonsense. Like, we got our own shtick. So, like, that should have been, like, a pretty... And, I mean, that's one of those things that was leaked, so that might not even be the case, but I don't... It's one of those things, it's like... The Elders of Zion isn't a real book, but all this thing did happen. And also, like, that meeting, it might have not happened, but gee whiz, it sure seems like that's what's been going on.
Right. Okay, so snip. Nevertheless, congressional Republicans have found a solution to the challenge, agenda setting. Political power is not simply the ability to influence the positions citizens or lawmakers take on issues, but also the ability to control what issues are discussed and voted on in the first place. Throughout the last Congress, Republican leaders simply declined to take up legislation that reflected the priority of the president, but not their own priorities. There were no votes on immigration restrictions or funding for a border wall, protectionist trade legislation, or infrastructure.
Nice.
Because if it had gone up for a vote, the Republican congressman would be exposed for the big business shills that they are. So McConnell and the people who decide what gets voted on, and the committees that decide what gets voted on and whatnot, the fix was in to where all those guys can go home here in a few months and say, hey, I'm your Donald Trump Republican. I'm your national populist Republican who's going to support Trump's agenda just like I just did. When if you actually get down into the details, these guys completely screwed. And, you know, Trump's always like, you know, I'm the best president ever. I passed so many things. But if you actually look at his list of things, there's no correlation at all with what he promised on the campaign trail. All that happened was he was just wide open to what McConnell and Ryan wanted, which is what we got, a bunch of tax cuts for Wall Street and just typical GOP deregulation.
Yeah. And so- I think I had told you that, too. Like, I remember chanting that at the Trump rallies. I remember chanting, like, we want tax cuts, you know, deregulate.
Move the embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Increase funding to the Israeli military.
Near and dear to my heart. It's very, very important.
I remember those chants. The public was totally, that was the issue that got them elected.
Recognize Golan Heights as Israel. Yeah, it's really important stuff.
Yep. So President Trump's priorities weren't voted down in the House or Senate. They were just never considered. While a majority of Americans blamed Mr. Trump for the partial government shutdown, very few blamed congressional Republicans. The GOP leaders have managed to not get the blame for the shutdown or get blamed by the base for abandoning the president.
Like on the pullout of, you know, Syria and Afghanistan that they just voted on, you know, they're trying to hem it up on like a technicality where, you know, they're like, well, technically, you know, like the president, if something goes on past like 90 days, he needs congressional approval. It's like what they're trying to get him on. Like, oh, no. We have to be the ones to say we're getting out of here. So right. Like they don't care about literally anything. They don't care about infrastructure. They don't care about wasting all this money. But buddy, like they're gonna go to the mat to make sure like your daughter gets to go die in some desert. Like that is just key. Like that's got to happen.
Yeah, it's what's that meme with Shaq? Where it's like I sleep and then
yeah, real shit. Yeah. Trump's trying to pull out of Syria. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah, and that's what this whole like let's support the GOP. Like the GOP leadership is absolutely more dangerous to us, more hostile, and more difficult to infiltrate with our ideas than any other institution in America, and they have the practice for it too. Like, you know, you have this long history of the John Birch Society, the Tea Party. If you look at what the Tea Party started out as, it was the same thing. Like, we've seen, and these new guys showing up thinking this is real smart. You know, for an old guy like me, I watched the Tea Party start out as this national populist revolt with a lot of racial undertones. And I watched it turn into a let's lower taxes, let's serve the corporate agenda thing that was not the original point. And then you have all these people like Marco Rubio, who sailed in under the Tea Party wave, have become the worst kind of neocon trash we can have in office. It's like, you know, the claw machine will not let you get the stuffed animal. Okay. And for us to tell our young activists to use that, to play on that claw machine and keep putting our coins in there and keep putting our time into that claw machine is profoundly stupid.
It's just really irresponsible, and short-sighted isn't even like the right term, because it's like we've done all this forever. You know, like the dog whistles, the John Birch stuff, like that already happened, and we know how it turned out, you know. Like initially, you know, people back in like the 60s and 70s, like they were kind of doing the, oh, we just want low taxes and good schools. But that was like with a wink and a nod, you know, like, yeah, great schools, you know, like, yeah. So like, why would it be a good thing to go back to doing that? Like it got us to where we are, and things are only worse.
Right.
So I don't know. That just seems goofy to me.
Okay. Well, there is some hope here, Tony.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we got some real hope here. The next article in NBC News, Russia's propaganda machine discovers 2020 Democratic candidate Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
Aloha, Tulsi. We're huge fans of yours, Tulsi. And that we're not being ironic. We actually want to help you win the Democratic primaries.
I will be stunned if she's even like given a platform at the debates. Like, I bet you $1 million she'll be pressured to back out before even.
If there's enough populist energy, if we can get the tankies and the people who supported Bernie, but Bernie's kind of gone away from the tanky thing and more towards this neoliberal thing in the past couple of years, if people realize that on the hard left, realize that Tulsi's the only one actually standing up to the deep state. I think, especially given how splintered this thing is, you know, because there are dozens of neoliberal hacks who all are going to be fighting over with the same exact messaging, and she's got a starkly different message. So I'm optimistic for her. But anyway, the bad news is she's a Russian shill. Okay,
that is unfortunate. She's already a traitor. I can't believe it. She betrayed me.
The Russian propaganda machine that tried to influence the 2016 U.S. election is now promoting the presidential aspirations of controversial Hawaii Democrat who earlier this month declared
controversial. Yeah, she's made a lot of waves. Yeah. There's a surfing joke there, but I'm not going to do that. Yeah, that sucks.
Yep. I caught it. No. Yeah, we're going to have to get better with those.
Please edit that out. Mute me.
Yeah, we'll edit that out. She declared her intention to run for president in 2020. Several experts who tracked websites and social media linked to the Kremlin have also seen what they believe may be the first stirrings of an upcoming Russian campaign of support for Gabbard. While some of her stances appeal to the left, she's also angered the party's liberal base with her past positions on same-sex marriage, abortion, and guns.
Yikes. Oof. That sounds, I got to tell you, that all sounds pretty bad and certainly very Russian.
Now,
Does this article go into any detail? Like, what are they saying? Or are they just, like, kind of trying to, like, lay the foundation for, like, a gay ops campaign against her?
Oh, they're totally laying the foundation for a gay ops campaign against her. And some base liberals who I follow, apparently the source used for this NBC article, which was dropped immediately before her big campaign announcement. So it was absolutely a gay op itself to try to trip her up right as she's leaping out the gate. They're being very clever. They hate her. And I forget which pundit it was, but he was like, yeah, we got all these exciting candidates, anyone except for Tulsi Gabbard, who could be our next president.
Sure.
The way they're gatekeeping on this is rich, but One thing, a lot of listeners, okay, she actually is pro-gay and paused and all these other Democrats.
Yeah, she's come back and apologized for the whole thing. Yeah, I know. Her dad was a Republican or something.
Her Samoan dad was like a super bog poster who had like an organization, Real People Against Subhuman Gay People or something of like that. And
wow, that's pretty edgy. Nice.
I don't believe that's the actual name of it. But he was actually a huge campaigner against gay marriage, and so was Tulsi in her early 20s or whatever. She eventually got woke, followed the typical path where, you know, some homosexual at Starbucks was nice to her.
She watched Modern Family once.
Yeah, she watched Will and Grace. You know, you can't hate that. So, you know, just let them get married.
Yeah, so, you know, Ellen, she's so nice, you know?
Yeah, Ellen's such a sweetheart. So anyway, I don't know, some people on the left are saying, like, she's anti-gay and she's anti-abortion and she's pro-guns. I think she's probably better than the other candidates, at least to the extent that, like, she's prioritizing these foreign policy and these grassroots, like, let's make things better for families. Even if her definition of family is a bit broader than yours and mine. It's a pretty solid agenda. But anyway, I'm very excited about her. And let me get the quote from her speech here. We must stand up against powerful politicians from both parties who sit in ivory towers thinking up new wars to wage, wasting trillions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of lives, undermining our economy, and destroying our middle class. I mean, that sounds like some Trump 2015 stuff, right? I mean, that's some real populism.
And it's funny, too, because, like, if a Democrat were to get in and talk that type of stuff, like, there would be a real groundswell of support. Like, especially if it's a woman, oh my God, the first woman president, like, do you really want to be standing in opposition at that? Yikes, you know?
Right. Well, I know a lot of our listeners out there will be like, wait, this woman's not even white and she's a shit lib. And they're right. Okay. But all I'm saying is I think it would be worthwhile to help get her to the debate stage to help trip up the neoliberal agenda.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, but there's like,
I wouldn't mind if she won at this point.
No, seriously.
What Trump's become.
Exactly, right. Like, that's our foreign policy is, honest to God, one of the most important things that we need to be worrying about. You know, like, that's why the world literally hates us. Like, we're wasting trillions of dollars that should be here. Like, you know, like, it's cool to talk about social stuff, but, like, social issues honestly don't matter. And she's just doing the bit. If we literally pull out of supporting Israeli wars, like, that alone would be worth electing basically anyone. Because to be honest, like, the federal government doesn't really affect me day to day. Like, to be honest, like, if Trump was our guy, I'd love the office of the presidency, you know? But, like, since he wasn't, I'm back on my old bullshit of not really caring about the federal government. Like, as a white activist, I worry about building networks with other white people to work towards, you know, potentially an ethnostate in the future. So if we get a liberal Democrat, as long as they don't pass hate speech laws and send me for a trip to Guantanamo, like, I don't care.
Well, that's where Tulsi also, I know we're getting a lot of skepticism in the chat room. Okay, guys, Tulsi is also targeting the social media companies for censorship and invasion of privacy. So I know what you're saying. Begbie says, but if she's absolute shit on immigration, then nothing changes. Ain't on A.
What's changed
says,
now?
Yeah, what's changed now? Isn't Tulsi a CFR member, though? I think she might be. But I would just ask you guys to look at how the deep state's approaching her campaign and what she's actually saying as a metric for that. But I don't want to push this too hard, but...
Yeah, no. Like, because I honestly don't think she'll make it. Like, there's no way she's going to make it.
I think she'll make it on the debate stage.
She could make it to the debate stage, sure. You know, because they're not going to want to, like, try to, like, box out some sort of a minority woman. You know what I mean? But there's no way. There's no chance in hell she actually wins the primary. Like, that's just, that can't happen. You know, they will not allow that to happen. But, no, like, we're going to have a Democrat president in 2020, I believe. I very firmly believe, like, now, just look at the math. Like, Trump would need to carry Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin again. And he carried all of those by like, what, 0.2%? You don't think like the Democrats can kind of,
Florida,
you know, make their base, you know, Florida go out and vote?
Texas are already, but I mean,
already close. And Florida's going to be way closer this time.
Yeah, Florida, if anything, with the convict releases, and there's a lot of, you know, there's thousands of Florida men are going to be pouring out of jail with not good. To vote.
You had a bunch of, after Hurricane Maria, you had a whole bunch of Puerto Ricans moving there to like vote in the Florida elections now. So right. Think of those new Florida men too.
Now, my pushback on that, and I'm not contradicting you. I'm just saying that, you know, with this political system, they always push towards a 50-50. So if Trump is really on the ropes, then that means the liberals are going to push that much further and be that much more irritating. I mean, that's how politics works, right? Yeah. In our bipartisan system, is if one party gets too much of an edge, then that party starts serving its radical base, or at least the Democrats do. Okay, the Republicans
meme about it while secretly like doing the Gang of Eight stuff, like trying to you know, give illegal immigrants back taxes and stuff. Yeah.
So, you know, you could have like Kamala Harris or Cory Booker. Cory Booker, I hope he stays in it because he's such a memeable jackass.
It'd be hilarious. He's going to cry at every time a camera's in his face. He starts screaming and crying. I love it.
But so we'll see how that goes. But I for one have joined the Aloha Revolution, and I'm looking forward to genuinely, not as a troll, not as a joke, I'm really looking forward to Tulsi's message reaching a larger audience and being a part of the national conversation.
Because there is like a populist wave like in this country that like both parties are desperately trying to, you know, put a lid on.
Yeah,
and it's happening no matter what. Right. You know, anybody talking it, like, I'm glad that they're doing it. Like, it is an important thing, and it doesn't matter if it's left or right. It literally doesn't. Like, we have to stop doing X is a fine position for me, you know?
Right. All right. So anyway, aloha to Tulsi. Take us on to the next one.
Okay. But we still need to contact her, you know, like her press secretary or whatever, and try to get her on the show.
Absolutely. Tulsi, you're invited on the Heel Turn Network on The Foundry.
We'll bring Richard on that one because he was real early on the Tulsi stuff.
Yep.
Like way before it was even cool.
Yeah, this network is very friendly to you.
Okay, so the now we're gonna get yelled at for saying that. Speaking for the but okay, well the next thing we have here is there was this protest or some sort of a march at a Stone Mountain. I don't know if anybody, you know, has been following that. There's supposed to be a like a neo-Confederate type rally for Stone Mountain there in Georgia. Apparently none of them showed up, but Antifa certainly did. There was a couple hundred of them, all masked up, which is a crime in Georgia, all armed, just marching through the streets, cops doing absolutely nothing. And that's just a little bit odd. And honest, you know what? If I wasn't a talentless hack, I would have had a link for this so you could be showing the video. It's out there. Trust me. But it just really sums up, like, I guess the state of where we are in politics now.
Well,
you can be. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, none of our guys showed up. The whole thing is based on a rumor that the Klan might be having an event there. There was never
like
a permit.
That.
There was never a nationalist event there. The whole thing, like they're in the absence of any street activism, they're just kind of like, if you guys had showed up, we would have totally assaulted you.
Yeah, we would have totally. Yeah.
And,
you know, told
you,
you
know, the cops are like, yeah, if you guys had showed up, we would have totally let them assault you. You know, with the fundamental premise being you're either leaving in a cop car or an ambulance, you know.
Yeah. No, I put a link here in our hangout. If
you don't leave an ambulance, you're leaving a cop car.
Right. No. They will state that explicitly. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. And that's all good. No, I was saying I posted a link to a tweet about this. They got videos of the whole thing. This Ford Fisher guy.
I don't know. Announce Charlottesville 3.0 and then just not show up.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what 2.0 was. So, you know,
well, in Charlottesville, they did. They had like they had like an awful riot with a bunch of violence and stuff. Just as a memorial, like reliving, you know,
Yeah, like this is they're hitting random journalists. Like, this is what will happen if you come here and say the N word. You know, like, really cool, powerful stuff. Okay, yeah, he's going to get video of that here in just a couple seconds. No, it's not really surprising.
But, hang on, we have a twist here. Existence is everything. It turns out it was bait. They'll all die of aggressive cancer in 3 months from their our secret nationalist radiation weapons.
I thought that was called AIDS.
Well,
we already had that. What do you mean?
They went back to the hotel room after their Antifa rally, and they all got AIDS, and now.
Sounds pretty cool. Yeah, nice. Yeah, you can go ahead and show the video whenever. Turd. For it. I don't know. Had you seen that yet, Parrot?
I can't see the video.
Yeah, it's on the stream.
Not watching it.
Sad. Okay.
Okay, so I guess what you guys saw was Antifa jackassery. I saw some clips of it earlier. It was all like, you know, we're gonna kill everybody who's pro-white. And they had like a Klan effigy that they set on fire in some macabre third world ritual.
Yeah, it was some real ooga booga stuff. I was very intimidated. They passed like bad juju our way. Yeah, I'd never even heard of this Ford Fisher guy until now, but I was reading some of his stuff. He seems like a turd. Not a big fan of this fella. But and Enoch actually had a good post, several good posts about this. And he had posted the information to contact, like Stone Mountain, like, hey, why'd you let this happen? Like, these people with no permit were just allowed to march through here, literally setting shit on fire. And that's just like, cool, like above board, absolutely.
Well, until we, and that's where we're going to be asking for money, not for us, but we need lawyers on this stuff. Because if you look at the Skokie precedent that the Supreme Court, and just because like the jury is not favorable, this stuff is so black and white, we can still win if we have the attorneys. I mean, Westboro Baptist Church won on First Amendment grounds, despite being the Westboro Baptist Church. So this idea that like everybody hates us, we just got to give up. There are achievable wins here. And
especially if something goes in front of like a federal court, like that's almost like a guaranteed win.
Yeah.
And I am so into the idea of the lawfare stuff. You know, I was born to Jew. Like we're going to do this. I'm so excited about it.
Okay. So it looks like we're I wrote a little manifesto for what we're trying to do here with the show. And I'm going to read it now. The idea is, because this is more than just a live stream. We're actually we kind of have a plan here, guys. Okay, so okay. When one thinks of labor unions and the labor movement as a vehicle for political change, one typically thinks of the left, Marxism, international socialism, and internationalism in general. It echoes. The truth is that Jewish Marxists hijacked America's organic labor traditions, which were integrally identitarian, nativist, and traditionalist to start with. One of America's earliest unions, the Order of United American Mechanics, was a whites-only union organized in the wake of Philadelphia's 1844 anti-alien riots to oppose cheap labor. And even Cesar Chavez, the acclaimed Latin American UFW labor leader, actively reported and even had his men attack illegal immigrants, with all the major unions in the 60s and 70s staunchly opposed to illegal and even legal immigration. As Milton Friedman, correctly noted, it's just obvious you can't have free immigration in a welfare state. Well, you can't have fair wages or representation in the workplace with free immigration either. Not only have today's American labor unions been poisoned with intellectually bankrupt Marxist theory, America's Wagner Act unions have also been crippled by decades of constraining legislation. We can resolve this problem by hearkening back to the origins of organized labor, back when they were truly secretive, truly radical, and truly committed to uplifting America's white tradesmen. Our foundries are secretive, but not initiatic or esoteric. It's not going to be like that, nothing in the woods.
Very little effigy burning, yes.
Our foundry syndicates are starting from the floor, the factory floor, and growing up from there, rather than waiting for some hero to come along and do the work for us. One shop, one small business, an entrepreneurial venture at a time, we're developing a grassroots network of men apprenticing, mentoring, and investing in one another. A 10% tithe of our net wages are informally invested into a pool that each syndicate sort of collaboratively invests in mutual uplift and political advancement. 10% sounds like a lot, and it is, but you guys decide how it's invested, okay? There's a lot that needs invested in, whether it's helping one of the members with the family hardship, helping an apprentice get the training resources he needs, funding regular meetings, helping our political prisoners, prepping every single one of you guys for economic adversity, sort of like the Swedelanders in South Africa, getting you guys with a solid foundation, okay, to where you can have a pro-white family, a pro-white workplace, a pro-white lifestyle, helping with the larger struggle. Quietly and patiently, you'll work to replace liberal white dudes and women alike at your workplace, okay? Quota and discrimination laws limit how much you can replace minorities and immigrants, and that's actually okay. The goal is to chase degenerates and globalists out of the austerity-resistant skilled trades. The goal is to ratchet the white working class between loyalty to their own and the destitution in store for them. Austerity is coming, and the only jobs that will be secure will be the real jobs, jobs where skilled work is being performed. If you believe white men are being squeezed out of government and multinational corporate jobs now, wait a couple decades. And when these sectors contract, the white males will be the first on the chopping block, even if they grovel. By aggressively cornering the sectors which are resistant to neoliberal quotas and human resource games, we can position our movement and our families to succeed. Our podcast, The Foundry, will not lead these syndicates. That's your job. You're the leader. All we'll be doing is all we're capable of doing, helping you, encouraging you, supporting you, and serving as a resource hub for your work. It's the most important work possible for white identity because it's the foundational work necessary to raise up a new generation of self-confident, self-sufficient, patriarchal family men, foundry men, who can't be doxed and intimidated into standing down. Street activism, formal organizations, and strategies all come after that foundation. This isn't competing with another organization. It's not an organization. It's just a foundational way to get started. And then from there, whatever organization or activism you do would be using that as the foundation, right? The foundry is pouring that foundation. If you're skilled in a trade or profession that empowers you to support yourself and your family without the fear of being doxxed, contact us at thefoundry@protonmail.com. If you're a young man who's truly ready to throw yourself into one of these trades or professions, contact us. We're going to do our best to try to network mentors with mentees. Oh, excuse me. That's htfoundry@protonmail.com. HT Foundry, not the Foundry. Excuse me. So that's heel turn, htfoundry@protonmail.com. I apologize. Okay. So we're going to do our best to try to network mentors with mentees, masters with apprentices, and employers with employees. The left started its conquest of our nation with grassroots labor activism, and that's where we must begin too. The only dignity the system will afford you is what you earn from the sweat of your brow. By teaming up with our other foundrymen, we will begin creating the social and economic spaces for identity and values, which will be the foundation for effective political resistance. We look forward to joining you.
Well, very nice.
Thank you. So that's
you're looking dumb for a while. Very nice.
Well, that's kind of the big plan here with the show and this dovetails. I mean, with Treadworker, there's this notion that all we did was wear Stahlhelms and run around outside. That was actually some isolated, unfortunate incidents that. Tony and I tried to put the brakes on, actually.
From 2015 onward, there were some seeds in there that weren't really working towards like our goal of unironically being the local solution to a globalist problem.
Yeah, that was our motto, and that was the idea. And we actually had these local apprenticeship and entrepreneurial schemes, and there are a few that have survived, you know, the organization might have imploded, but a lot of these ideas that we were working on are still going at full speed and actually developing and growing. So we're trying to take that momentum and keep it rolling.
Yeah, no, and there's a ton to that. And I imagine it's something that people will, I mean, I've told people everything that went down, and I imagine as the show goes on, like, we'll hear more questions about it and everything, but you know, that's for what we just discussed. That's a pretty good stopping point. Oh, here's a thing far less serious, but have you ever heard of the Canary Mission? You know anything about this?
No, no.
Okay, apparently this is some sort of a Jewish academic organization that tracks anti-Semitism, of all things. Like, go figure, right? So every month or so, they retweet this thing about me, and it's so funny. I don't know what this is. Like, I'm one of, like, maybe three other white people on the list. It's mostly all, like, Arabs that are, like, dunking on Israel. But this thing here about me, they always share this one screen cap for me, and it's so hilarious. Like, what I'm saying here is, could you guys not be so mean about Hitler? Yeah, thanks. Like, that's all I said. Clearly, like, a stupid joke, but they're, like, so burnt, and they share this all the time. And then McNabb always gets on there and makes fun of him, too. It's actually pretty funny. I'm glad they do this. But I just got a bunch of notifications about it, and I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, it's been several years now that the alt-right's been a thing, and they still don't have any gauge for the humor or what's serious or, you know, anything like that. They just take everything at, like, slack-jawed face value.
Well, mostly what I'm curious about is I've said some way more fire stuff, but, like, that's the one that they really want to hang on.
Well, yeah, that's how that stuff goes. A lot of it's just poor reporting, which brings us to our next thing. Say you suck at reporting. You're a journalist who just doesn't do a great job. You've worked at BuzzFeed writing articles about farting and eating butts, and you're writing your...
Hey, be fair. They write about putting things in your butt, too. Okay.
Yeah. So you're sitting there writing your next article about how to put things in your butt, and you get that email that you're fired.
The pink slip comes down.
The pink slip comes down. What do? Okay. You learn to code. They get mad about that. It's actually really good advice. Like, these guys, learning to code, computer programming is a growing and promising field that, you know, provides a lot of independence and provides a lot of opportunities and a lot of flexibility.
And you've been doing this for, like, a while too, so
yeah
you're a pretty good authority on that.
Well,
I mean, you've been literally Matt Parrott for basically as long as you've been alive, right?
Yeah, I actually in fourth grade went to a state media fair for my computer program and got second place after an Indian kid who his dad clearly coded. It was a chess program that actually had the computer would make moves against you. It was a chess program written by a supposed fourth grader. Uh-huh. I mean, maybe the kid was just that bright, but I got blown out by that kid, and that's the moment I became racist, right?
Of course.
The first time I saw non-white kids, I went up to Indianapolis in the bus, and
it was just a nightmare. Yeah,
they blew me out.
Right, all of this activism—it's all to get over one childhood slight, which is usually the angle most people run against the alt-right, and it's very funny. Instead of, like, you know, oh, maybe there's a lot of socioeconomic and, you know, cultural, and maybe there's pressures that people are feeling that I haven't identified. But no, actually, one time a black kid, he beat me up, and I was a big loser, and everybody called me gay, and, like, that's it. Right?
That's
everybody, all of us.
That whole thing. And I love about him is it's always such a subcultural thing. Like, I was also in the hate movement too, and I was hating to make friends, but a lot of those people were mean to me and hurt my feelings. And if they've hurt your feelings too, call 1-800 Piccolini for free tattoo removal.
If you get bullied by the racists, yeah.
I've had a lot of friends get free tattoo removal from Mr. Piccolini. If you have a racist tattoo and, you know, you want to go to the water park with your kids, you're second guessing it. Some of you guys out there have the trad worker tattoo. I'm sorry. Talk to Christian. Pretend you've had a conversion. Get that tattoo removed and then tell him to get fucked.
It's not a bad angle, and I really wish more people would just do that. It's really funny.
Okay, so it's not actually bad advice. The thing about coding is, first of all, it's not for everyone, but a lot of people are kind of intimidated about the supposed big-brainedness of it. And it's more, you don't actually have to be, I guess there's a floor like IQ 105, 110. Like there's some guys, and there's nothing wrong with that, where it just they're just not bright enough to code. But I think that's way overplayed. I think the big problem is kind of an ability to focus on boring things, and you either know if you're that kind of guy or not, right? Because there is a lot of tedium in coding that you won't have in other lifestyles. And I think if you're the guy who could sit there and read a technical reference all the way through, if you're the person who could sit there and read an engrossing novel all the way through, there are actually a lot of people with attention deficit disorder, seemingly, in programming. But it's really some people have the inclination, some don't. And what kills me is a lot of people just won't get over that first hump, because there's a few weeks where you're just learning stuff and you're not seeing anything from it. And during that first few weeks, people just give up and say, I just don't have what it takes. I feel like if they get all the way through to just power through that first part, I think we'd have more programmers. I know several people I've tried to mentor on this. A lot of times they just I try to coach them, but they you got to have, I guess with any of these professions, it's a common problem, right? Like you've actually got to shut up and work hard. One of the exciting things about coding, now you can go to college for this or trade school for this, but you can really, and I know because it's my path and it's the path of several other coders I know, you can really just read free thick books, PDF, or just at your local bookstore if it still exists. You can really just read the book, get good at practicing, and then jump on Upwork or Fiverr or one of these places and start underbidding people, right? So the on-ramp, and that's why a lot of people, the learn to code thing is so funny, because it's really something anybody can just dive right into. But you don't see it very often because people are intimidated by it. So, as far as the docs proof element, right? So it depends on what kind of programming you get into, but programming's so wide open with so many opportunities, and that's where the kind of coding you're doing comes in. The kind of coding I do is specific stuff for small businesses and websites, right, where it's a different customer every time, and you can kind of go out there and have individual relationships with these customers who either know what you're about and don't care, or, sometimes just don't know what you're about. I mean, I recently did a website for an illegal immigration children book author. And, when you're doing this kind of thing, that's the work that came in. I bidded for it. I delivered a suitable product, and everybody wins, right? Let me think. What else do I need to cover here?
Say holy see. I've already made this joke, but you should probably go ahead and get into that.
Yeah. Yes. Temple OS. Have you built any compilers?
Yeah.
check out Temple OS, the real operating system. I'm actually very much a Linux guy, though. You can do this in Windows. You can do this on Mac. Any environment will do. I'm like with everything else, I'm kind of a try hard hipster with it. I do the Vim on the remote shell, where it's all completely command line. I don't mess around with conventional IDEs, which in the kind of work I do, where I go into pre-existing solutions that are oftentimes broken and messy, Like, you don't get to choose exactly which IDE and framework you're going to be fixing that on. And that makes you a very docs-proof. Now, you can, like, learn C Sharp in the .NET framework, or Java is another good one, the sort of big corporate languages, right? And you can get a corporate job, and that might be right for you. My thing is avoid any job with an HR department. And if you get certified in these Microsoft languages and Microsoft frameworks, or you know any of the big corporate frameworks like Apple Swift and things like that, where you actually be looking at a corporate job, you can get doxed, right? And they're not a whole lot of scrap jobs out there for you to be fighting for on the open market. Those are more in JavaScript, PHP, even Perl, these sort of kind of hacky languages. Like when somebody asks for a website, it's usually made in WordPress, which is PHP and JavaScript and MySQL, right? And then their nephew builds the website. It all falls apart a couple weeks later. The nephew goes off to college. And they need their site fixed. So they go on one of these websites and they try to find somebody. And you're fixing that solution, okay? So that's a little different than doing a C-sharp solution at a proper corporate job where somebody comes in and says, hey, Bob, here's exactly what you'll be coding today. You're not really doing any of the planning. You're not doing any of the marketing. You're just shutting up and coding exactly what needs to be coded.
Just that, with like what you're talking about, you'll mostly spend time rooting through other people's lines of useless, defunct code and trying to make sense of it.
Well, I'm afraid that's in almost any coding profession you spend. And what's really terrifying is if you're doing it long enough, you'll eventually find yourself cussing at your own old code that you did a crappy job with. And forgot what it's supposed to do. And because you didn't document it properly and you were in a big hurry, now you're stuck having to refactor and recode your own work. I would give that advice, but I feel like it's better to just let people run their nose into that wall on their own, and they'll figure out, like, no, I need to document this. I need to properly format it to where it's easily readable and things like that. There are actually some good books. If somebody hits me up, I can point them towards that, like more on the, not so much the specific APIs and language directives, but actually kind of big picture how to code in a way that makes it easier to code, how to work with a team and things like that. But with coding, I mean, with a lot of jobs, the sort of thing you're actually doing all day isn't actually the skill. Right? Like, if you're an electrician, even though you've read the NEC guide or whatever, you might spend half your day in a crawl space fighting with a raccoon fixing some drywall that you ripped out or whatever, rather than actually just doing the wiring diagrams you studied for, right? And that's no different with programming, especially if you do it sort of cowboy style where you're doing the freelancer lifestyle. You actually spend, I'd say, at least half your time, if not significantly more, talking to people who have no idea what's going on, trying to bridge the gap between what they expect and what's possible, trying to get that next client for next week because you don't have the work, you know, filling your sales funnel and all that stuff, and you know, dealing with it. If you don't go through a conventional thing that takes care of your payment for you, you got to do the billing and stuff and be like, Bob, I made your website, please pay me. So you, and that's with any entrepreneurial thing, right? Like you end up having to wear all these administrative hats. But I really favor, for somebody who's a nationalist, going down there with the hacky languages. People make fun of JavaScript. They say it's not a real programming language like C++ and C Sharp or Swift, and it's not, okay? JavaScript has its problems and issues, but the future is pretty much JavaScript, and there's no real way to fight it at this point. And the messes and problems that you're going to find out there on the market, a lot of them are in PHP and JavaScript, okay? And a lot of people, when they kind of like type in learn to code on Google, you know, after they get fired from Huffington Post, they're like, hi, you know, screw these alt-right guys. I'm actually going to learn to code and be great at it. But there's a lot of pressure to learn like Ruby and Python and these kind of academic languages. But you've really got to look at what's actually being used out in the wild and get good at those. Would be my advice for that.
Well, then my question to you is, who are the real last cowboys, truckers or coders?
Oh, truckers are definitely, the last American postmodern cowboys. There's no comparison there.
Sure.
But that'll be a later episode, because and this is one of the cool things.
You know another guy?
Yeah, I'll put on a different hat and be a different guy. Because coding is so monotonous, okay, I actually do this thing where 3 days a week I truck and 3 days a week I code. So I get out of the house because, and we'll talk about this in some future episodes about what it's like to sort of work from home and be effective working from home. The short story is that you would think working at home in your pajamas or buck naked, depending on your lifestyle, would be a dream come true. It's actually its own kind of private hell.
Yeah, no, I'm glad. Like, I'm not the type of person that if I'm just at home and I have something to do, like, I can't just do it. You know, there's other shit I would like to be doing or need to be doing, and like, I can't stay focused on stuff like that. That's why when I go to work, you know, buck naked, of course, I'm glad it's just not in the home. So,
well, in your line of work, that would be frightening.
there's a lot of danger involved. I agree. Yeah.
That's brave. A big question that a lot of people have is they think, well, you have all these Indians and Chinese, all these people in the third world competing on the freelance market, right? Okay. Yes and no. And that comes back to where half of your coding is not really coding. It's communicating. These people suck at communication. People don't trust them. And they don't trust them because these people are often scammers. These people come up with really awkward solutions. They don't communicate effectively about the solutions. There's just a huge market, and they're willing to pay two or three times as much just because you're a white guy who speaks English, okay, for your code over their code. And maybe our clients are racist, and maybe they should go with the Filipino guy sitting in the computer lab who's trying to offer, you know, $2 for the whole project when you're requiring $80. Okay, they'll pay you $80 because that guy, even when people try that guy, this whole notion that the world's full of these big brain people who are just so much smarter and more effective than Americans is simply not true. I mean, there's talent out there, don't get me wrong. But you, if you're a relatively intelligent white guy, you can compete and win and support yourself and your family with doing this coding. And you don't have to be a super genius or work 80 hours a week either.
And that's the thing, even if, you know, you're big faceless corporation that you work for does want to either import somebody or force you to train somebody via Skype or something in India, just make yourself valuable to somebody else. Like, these type of skills can easily transfer. And that's actually one of the main things we kind of want to stress here with the Foundry is these type of jobs, if anything does happen negatively, you can very easily take them somewhere else.
Yeah, bouncing back, being occupationally resilient. I've been doxxed and fired so many times. I had a trucking job. I was working for Budweiser 6 months ago. I came in, and the boss and the manager were sitting there. I was like, I'm fired for being racist, ain't I? And they're like, yeah, we found out that you're a big racist on the internet. You got to go. That's not compatible with the Budweiser way of life. I was like, okay. But that'll be on our trucking episode. I got fired from my corporate coding job as well, and ended up training a very nice Asian lady for my job. Real charming sweetheart. I don't, you know, but I,
the real American experience, real middle class hours.
But yeah, but I went home. I started doing the independent route, and I've never looked back. I being in those cubicles. Having to watch what I say, having to kind of go along with things getting increasingly more and more paused, being afraid of, you know, it was eventually an Indianapolis Star article that caught up with me that got me fired from my corporate job. you know, being afraid that that would happen. So when the axe actually, when Damocles' sword finally fell on my head, it was actually a tremendous opportunity for me. And that occupational agility is a huge part of the conversation we're going to have.
Yeah, no, and we're actually coming up here on the end of our show now. Got to make sure everybody gets their stream started at the right time. But hey, I could listen to you talk about coding languages for the rest of the night. So I'll probably just be up on here on Hangouts listening to you talk to me.
Okay. Well, I guess that concludes our first episode. Like I said, at HT Foundry, that's heel turn, at htfoundry@protonmail.com. Send us your questions. If you're somebody who has a skilled trade that you'd like to, and you don't have to put your face on here like us, you can just, we'll protect your anonymity. Okay. Hit us up.
Yep. Thank you.
Donation. Okay. Senator G. Leo Blastoma, Republican Arizona, I presume. thank you for your service. For $5. Thank you very much for that too. Killing John McCain and sending me $5. I love you. Another path that is extremely versatile is JavaScript, especially React Redux for web apps. And yeah, the React framework is where everything's going, guys. Sorry to all you haters out there. I'm going to get some haters saying we got to, COBOL's still alive. Forget it. It's React is the future. Can get a very high-paying job from a startup to a consulting agency to a large corporation and everything in between. Absolutely true, sir.
Okay, well, I think that's going to do it. For real this time, though, I want to thank everybody who actually came and watched. We kind of announced it somewhat short notice. We just got this offer, like a week ago or so. But, I'm glad this many people got to tune in. We didn't do a terrible job, I don't think. So, hopefully we'll do a slightly better job next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week unless we're canceled.
Peace. Bye.